Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks for listening. This episode will feature an interview with WWE legend, icon, Hall of Famer, all of it, Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's promoting a new show where he's becoming an interviewer on USA Network, but we also talk about a lot of WWE stuff. We were sort of all over the place. We talked about steakhouses, food, WWE. Talked a lot about sort of the Austin 316 birth, Mike Tyson, and we talk about his interview show, Baker Mayfield, one of his guests, so we get into all of that on this episode. Last week, if you missed it, John Sterling and Susan Wolman, the radio voices of the Yankees, were on. If you're a Yankee fan, make sure you check that out. We also spoke to Ken Rogers, who sort of runs Hard Knocks, which is now up and running on HBO, so we get a interesting interview about that. The Browns were actually considered for a second season in a row, which I thought was interesting. Ken mentioned that on the pod. So check those out. Subscribe, rate, review. If you're a new listener checking out Stone Cold, please rate and review and subscribe. It all helps. And now we get right to Stone Cold Steve Austin. All right, joining me now, second time I'm interviewing him, first time in person, a thrill for me. One of the all-time greats, legends in WWE history, and now he has a new show on USA called Straight Up Steve, good interview show, the iconic Stone Cold Steve Austin. Steve, thanks for coming in.
Man, I'm glad to be here. I've been out here on the East Coast now for a couple of days. I'm starting to adapt to the change, but I'm still about 3 hours off. So if I appear a little discombobulated, just bear with me as we work through this.
That's all right. I'm discombobulated, too. I feel like there should be glass breaking and something when I introduce you.
Hey, man, you don't want that glass to break, because if it does, somebody's going to get hurt.
We got to talk about your new show, Straight Up Steve.
Sure.
Got a little WWE stuff to talk about because you were at a reunion. Forget all that. I want to get to the important stuff. I follow you on Instagram, and I saw last night, I think the last two nights, you cleared that up, you were at Smith and Walensky's.
Went there with my niece, and it's funny, I went down to concierge to make some reservations. And, man, I don't wear long pants. I am today because I got to look nice. But I said, hey, man, I want to go to Smith & Walensky because Vince McMahon, you know, turned me onto that place years ago. That's how I know it.
Right.
And it was right down the road from where I was staying. So I said, I want to go there. I said, but make sure I can get in shorts. And the guy made the reservations, and the next night I was going to go back because I'm a creature of habit and there's nothing else like in the vicinity. I didn't want to go across town. So he made reservations again. He goes, oh, will your wife be joining you again? And I said, dude, man, I said, that's my niece. My niece graduated Texas A&M University in 3 years. Now she's here in New York City in law school, so I'm so proud of her.
Right.
So anyway, I was hanging out with my niece, and she's my eating buddy. And we probably took in about 20,000 calories over the course of 2 meals.
Oh, that's what I wanted to get to. I want to know what the order is for Stone Cold at a Smith & Walensky. Before I get to that, let me just quickly. Have you ever been to Peter Luger's in Brooklyn?
Now, I understand that is Undertaker's place. He claims that to be his favorite steakhouse here. I haven't been there. When I sent out that IG post, everybody said, go to Peter Luger's, give it a try. So I will, but it wasn't next door to my hotel, so I did not.
Okay.
So I got the bone-in ribeye, medium rare, a lobster tail, and then we got cheesecake. And the next night,
no sides?
Well, we had asparagus on the side, okay. And I wasn't going to go heavy carbs because I'm trying to watch what I eat right now.
Right.
Because in the form of the potatoes or the hash browns, whatever it was, I drank about 3 or 4 margaritas. And so there were the carbs in the form of simple sugars.
It's funny because I think most people assume, especially the wrestling fans, that you're only a beer drinker, but you like the margarita, huh?
Man, well, it depends. You've got to make one hell of a margarita for me to dig it. And I grilled the guy that was working with us, and both guys were really good. And I asked him, dude, what kind of margarita do y'all make? Explain the process to me, because I am a margarita and a drink snob. I've taken my margaritas to the Walter White breaking bad level. That's how specific I am. It's got to be a good one.
Right.
So they made a good one. They took care of us. And the next night, we got a different guy waiting on us. He brings me this taller margarita, and then my guy from the night before, he goes, no, this is how you do it. He took the drink. We got it all settled down. But to your point, yes, I love beer, and I am in the beer business. I have Broken Skull IPA, and it's high in demand, and it's an outstanding IPA, but I love margaritas. And hey, man, everything in moderation, but yes, I do have a rotation of alcoholic substances I like to partake in.
Gotcha. I'm curious, because you talked about trying to get in there with the shorts. Has Stone Cold Steve Austin ever been told he can't come into a place? I find that one hard to believe if you tell me yes.
Years ago, I stay at the, what's it, Crown Plaza? Mm-hmm. Okay, that used to be my hotel when I was running roughshod and white hot.
Right.
And then they would let me wear shorts everywhere I wanted to go in there. And then finally there was someone changed shifts or whatever. And it was a guy that didn't, know that that's a place that I frequent. And he goes, man, you can't come in here in shorts. And I never stay at the hotel again. And I never pull the, hey, don't you know I'm, right. I never do that. So I just quietly said, oh, okay, man. But I never went back. So yes, it did happen. I mean, awesome. I'm very casual, man. Yeah. I live out there in Marina Del Rey. And even when I'm in South Texas, when it's colder than hell, or when I'm hunting in Northern Nevada with my brother-in-law, I wear shorts really about 360 days out of the year.
Yeah. You didn't have to put pants on for us, that's for sure.
I didn't put them on for you. I'll take them off. I put them on for all the other stuff I had to do on camera.
I got you. It's funny. When I had you on last year, one of the things we talked about a lot, I'm a big wrestling fan, and obviously what you've done in that business, everyone knows about. I'm fascinated by your post-wrestling career. We talked a lot when I had you on the last time about your podcast, which enormously successful. I mean, if anyone would have said 20 years ago Stone Cold was going to become this top podcaster, who would have believed that? The guy giving the finger, flipping off people. And now you've got this interview show on USA that starts Monday, August 12th, Straight Up Steve, 11 p.m. Eastern, right after Raw. Do you love doing interviewing people? Has that become sort of a passion for you?
No, technically, the name of the show is Straight Up Steve Austin, so right. It's my entire name. But no, you've got all the time stuff, correct. But the deal with podcasting was I wanted to start one about a year before I started, but I didn't know anything about the technology of it. So Podcast One calls my agents and they say, hey, man, because they're kind of recruiting people that maybe they could find some success behind a microphone. Right. So based on my past experience and my run in WWE and social media following, maybe I could be successful. Hey, man, you want to do a podcast? You damn right I do. And the reason I really wanted to start doing that was because once you leave that WWE universe and it's a global platform and you're on television and you're worldwide. And so when you leave that, you don't have a voice anymore. And so I solely started just to have a voice. And I really started it as a hobby and a way to express myself and also a way to stay in contact with the fan base that I worked my ass off and busted my ass so hard, to gain, to keep in touch with them. So I have that direct line of communication. And it's my voice because I might as well be standing out on the street with a bullhorn saying, hey, man, watch Straight Up Steve Austin.
Right.
Now the podcast pales in comparison to the global platform that is the WWE,
right.
But it's something rather than nothing.
And tell me how Straight Up Steve Austin came about. USA come to. I found out before we started taping. So WWE has nothing to do with Straight Up Steve Austin. That's a total USA Network endeavor. How did that come about?
You're correct. Man, they got in touch with my agents and they said, hey, man, the guys at USA and the gals at USA have a idea. They want to pitch by you. And so we all meet. There's a bunch of us, the Brain Trust, at a table. And they start throwing these ideas out. And it's kind of like, it's a talk show, but, we're doing things and maybe it's a DIY or it's an activity. You're doing something from someone else's background or my background. And, you're using activity to form a bond and some chemistry and also change stories and actually at some points have in-depth conversation. Right. So we shot a pilot and man, it took about a year.
Who was the guest on the pilot?
Trace Atkins was my guest, country music singer. Now he's trying to do some acting, Trace Atkins. And we did some really cool stuff in that episode. And they were thinking, okay, as they start to test it, different markets, they loved it. And we were thinking about taking some of the elements out of it and turn it more into just kind of like one-on-one, just like you and I are sitting here. Mm-hmm. But there's so many people out there doing it right now and doing it at a very successful level. I'm better when you give me my personality and I kind of, live in the moment and do things. So that we kept all the beats in there. We do different things, different activities, and you get a chance to have fun. And I hate to be indoors. I love to be outside. If I'm not riding my side-by-sides in Nevada or hunting or whatever, I'm outside. I don't spend any time indoors. And this show takes place outside.
Did I see a clip where you get a pedicure on one of these episodes?
You might have. You might have.
And was that the first ever pedicure for Stone Cold Steve?
No, it was about the fourth. Okay. I've gone to get a couple with my wife who suggested it.
Yeah.
And, I will say, I'm not going to lie to you, we're 4 feet across from each other. Man, I enjoyed it. Man, they start giving you that kind of rubbing your forearms and your ankles and stuff and then trimming all your fingernails and your what's those things called? Your
cuticles. Yeah.
Man, so now we did that on one episode, but every now and then I'll get a mani pedi about twice a year now. I can say that.
That's the headline.
Producer's sitting behind me shaking his head like you killed every damn member Stone Cold Steve Austin I had.
That's the video clip they're gonna play right now.
Oh, absolutely.
It's funny, I got a pedicure once I went to the Borgata in Atlantic City for a weekend and I wanted to get a massage and I went down and the prices were like ridiculous, like an hour massage, $175. But I wanted some sort of pampering, so I'm looking. It was like pedicure. I'm like, I'll try. You sit down, and the way they have it is they got a setup like these mics. They pull out a TV right in front of you, so you have a TV here, and the lady's just doing stuff to your feet, and you got to, you know, act like, oh, I don't get. It was pretty damn good.
No, it's good, man. I no TV.
Yeah, you need a little TV. I was watching a Knicks game, getting a pedicure.
I can't fault you on that. You're a sports guy.
Yeah, what do you? Tell me about. So I know a couple of people on the show. You have Becky Lynch, which the WWE Universe will love. She's the hottest thing going right now. And you have Baker Mayfield. Tell me about Baker a little bit. How did that interview go? He's a character.
I like that guy a whole lot. And he's got a great head on his shoulders. You saw what he did in his first year. He broke Peyton Manning and Russell Wilson's touchdown record and didn't play the entire season. So he throws a real accurate football, and these are things we all know. And all of a sudden, I loved his receiving core last year, and then all of a sudden you add OBJ into the mix. I don't know. I like those guys. I enjoyed meeting Freddie Kitchens. They hired him as an interim coach. Now he's a head coach. Miles Garrett, I got a chance to meet him. He's from Texas A&M. They've got so many players over there. If they can all come together like I think they can, I just hope that they do well this year. I'll really be watching them. But that kid, for being 24, 25 years old, has a great head on his shoulders and is very composed and he's very confident. And he's never been plan A. He always had to work his ass off to get that spot. Mm-hmm. And so he's not that guy that walks around with the big head. You know, he's thankful for every opportunity that he's gotten, and every opportunity that he's gotten, he's knocked out of the park.
Yeah, absolutely. And they are the number one team, I think, for fans to sort of watch this year. And it's interesting because, like you said, they exceeded all expectations last year, especially Baker. But now the expectations and the pressures get put on. I'm curious, when you're in WWE, I mean, I guess you can relate to it because there's the Stone Cold before the famous Austin 316 says, "I just whipped your ass," and the Stone Cold after that. Do you see the comparisons there with NFL players, even of the expectations get on you? You were the top dog in that company. Did you feel the pressure to be sort of the main attraction in the company and a locker room leader and stuff like that?
No, because it was all an evolution, evolutionary type thing. It was a work in progress. And, you know, finally I started getting hot and I had to have conversations with Vince McMahon. He kind of was editing me a little bit and micromanaging me. And I said, hey, man, if I'm in this world, I said, you've got to let me have my personality because you've got guys here that are way bigger than me, way flashier, but you got to give me my personality. And he started letting me have that. And then we created everything that we created. Now, going back to football, I think it's a completely different ball game, no pun intended. So, you know, obviously, you know, you always hear about the sophomore slump. I really don't see that happening with Baker because I think he's going to take all that experience and draw upon it and be even better. Same thing with like a Saquon Barkley, just for the Giants. I mean, he's like that once in a generation type running back.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I really don't think there's hardly any comparisons to be made there.
Helps that Baker also has Beckham now this year, which he didn't have anything like that last year. So that should help with the sophomore slump. You mentioned Barkley, Baker. Are you, like, on Sundays in the fall, are you there in front of the TV for, like, 8 hours watching NFL football all day?
Absolutely worthless on Saturdays and Sundays. And then when football season comes to a close, you know, because, you know, the football, you know, go to the national championship, and then NFL get into the playoffs, right. Super Bowl, and then it's just like this big letdown.
Oh, yeah.
You kind of go into this mild depression, and then you kind of start kicking out of it when the combine starts coming around.
Right.
And, you know, who would have figured? Right. They've been covering the combine for a long time these days. Now, but back in the day when it was just nothing but wait till next year,
right?
Man, those were hard times.
Yeah, and even free agency is a big deal, and where guys are going to say, are you a fantasy football player?
I just got finished talking to some fantasy football guys yesterday, and they actually finally explained to me how it works, the scoring system with the running backs, receivers, and tight ends. And so now as of yesterday, I have an understanding of it. So I never could appreciate it. And I've had so many of my friends that are into it and say, hey, man, get in our fantasy league. Just we'll help you out. We'll show you how to do it. It's like, no, man, yeah. It ain't for me. But now I might start checking it out and getting into it. But yeah. I just started to understand it yesterday.
You'll watch the games differently if you get into it. Just be careful about that.
Interesting. Okay, duly noted.
Because if you're rooting for a team, you're going to be rooting for players that you may not – normally root for. It gets a little. I stopped playing a couple of years ago. It was one of the, but I bet the game, so I stopped rooting.
Interesting.
Interest.
I
want a couple more on Straight Up Steve Austin. A couple of WWE things, only because they had the big Raw reunion a couple of weeks ago, and you were by far the highlight of that show. And I watched it, and I was now listen. The WWE is a tough thing because you don't know, and I'm not going to use the words real and fake, but you are out there as a character. Sometimes you're out there as yourself. Sometimes it's a mix. I felt you were so genuine in your happiness to be doing what you were doing on that show for the last, you know, the last 10, 15 minutes that they ran that. You seemed completely authentic in what you said. Being there, you kept saying you referenced your brothers and your sisters, the beer, great moment with Lillian Garcia. What was that like for you?
Well, it was different because, you know, I haven't been around in a pretty good while to go out there and do something as far as like cutting a promo, trying to sell pay-per-view tickets and stuff like that, you know, with an opponent. And, you know, when you're working with an opponent, you may be talking that trash, but in that same moment, you're building that opponent up because you're about to clash. And that's the art of selling a pay-per-view from, you know, a microphone standpoint, along with the angle that takes place in the ring. So when you go back and you want to be, you come back as Stone Cold Steve Austin, they know me is the toughest SOB that ever, you know, come through there and stomp mud holes at everybody and walk them dry. And when that glass breaks, I mean, it's your ass. So then it's to, you know, it's all about the family reunion, and I'm going to be the last guy out there. So I'm about to go out there, and they hand me this piece of paper, like you got in front of you, a couple of paragraphs on there, and it's kind of sentimental, sappy. And I'm like, man, first of all, I don't remember anything. That's why I don't even try to act, because I can't remember. I don't want to remember things. It's like, right. I'd rather rub my face on barbed wire than try to memorize something. So all of a sudden, we're about to go out there, and it's live TV, man. It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And I've been on live TV forever. But, you know, when you ain't been around.
What was the last thing you did, the WrestleMania thing with Hogan, where he said the wrong name, the wrong arena name? Was that?
Yeah, it was down there. What was that, WrestleMania 30 down there, 34 down there in New Orleans?
That was probably the last thing you did on TV.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So anyway, you go out there, and you know, I'm paying respects to my brothers and sisters that run them down, because it's a family reunion. So it's one thing when you hand me a mic and say, hey, Steve, man, if you go Stone Cold Steve Austin, you got 10 minutes, 11 minutes, 12 minutes, whatever, go out there solo. I'm going to kill it, crush it.
Does that make you nervous on
every
single
time?
Level
no,
whatsoever?
Okay. Absolutely not. But when I got 30, 40 people, then I got to make sure, in theory, pardon my language, but they don't have their thumbs up their ass and they're just standing around like a bunch of, you know, dummies, you know, because so I want to include them.
Right.
And it wasn't about me just being Stone Cold Steve Austin and blowing a bunch of smoke up my ass.
Right.
It was there to pay respects to everybody and thank the crowd. So I went out there, and actually when I went out there, I drank that beer, and when I hit that first turnbuckle, I have this ring on, and I always wear this ring. And that first turnbuckle I hit, when I threw my arms up because I put water on, my ring flew off and hit the barricade and landed on the floor.
That's a heavy
ring.
And
I'm up there. Yeah, well, it's a heavy ring, but that's a ring that's got a lot of sentimental value to me. So I mark it with my eyes, but we're live TV, so I got to keep doing my thing. The TV guys, the camera guys, may have known each other for so long, they saw it fly off, and they grabbed it for me while I kept doing my thing. So I'm out there. I still haven't come up with what I'm going to say yet, because it's a family reunion, and so it's got to come from the
you're
heart.
You're in the ring.
Yes.
Live TV, mic in your hand, and you still don't know what you're going to say.
100%.
Wow.
Shoot.
Wow.
So anyway, I say, hey, man, give me a hell yeah. Based on that response, I said, give me another hell yeah. Based on that response, I knew I could get them one level higher. I was conducting a test. I had them hook, line, and sinker, and they responded accordingly. And anytime you go out, when you hear that glass break and that roof blows through the roof, I know good from bad from excellent, and it was excellent. And so that it was a crowd that was really in tune. So Tampa, thank you very much, because each and every performer or wrestler or whatever you want to call them lives and dies by that. You do, because it's a gauge.
Yeah.
And so when I knocked it out of the park and I knew they were with me, that's when I just started, hey, man, telling the stories. I went down there earlier. I talked to Hogan. Booker T and me did a podcast I met Ron Simmons coming down the elevator, hung out with the Godfather Boogeyman. I was telling stories, ones that actually happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking about as entertainers, you know, we go up and down the road, but you know, we're entertainers. But as we're trying to entertain you to take your mind off your problems, we're doing that same stuff, having the same problems on the road.
Right.
So anyway, it did come from the heart and it came across like that. And some people said, golly, Steve, it would be nice to see you stun somebody. It wasn't about me getting off on somebody and doing a Stone Cold Stunner. Right. We were there to say thank you.
Right, right.
And that's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I did not see, I mean, I don't want to put you in a bad spot. Overall, the show is not completely well received by a lot of fans for other reasons. But your segment, I thought, I didn't see a bad word about it. So I'm interested. It's interesting to me that was a take that people are a little disappointed you didn't drop a stunner on someone on that show.
Well, it's funny because people watch the business of pro wrestling so much different than they used to, because back in the day, you watched it for what it was.
Yeah.
These days, they're watching it from two ways. They're watching it for what it is and the writing and booking behind it.
Exactly.
Back in the old days, you didn't think about the booking behind it. You just watched it for what it was. And it was either good or bad. The guy you wanted to win, hopefully he won. If he didn't, you know, the heel got heat out of it, and that's where it started and stopped. Now they're gauging on so many levels and trying to get so inside that people almost don't allow themselves to enjoy it as much as they should.
If Twitter and all these message boards were around back when you were doing your thing, like when that first night, Madison Square Garden, the first time you ever stunned Vince McMahon, iconic moment, it would be now twisted into, you know, Vince didn't sell it well, and now Steve is not, you know, as dominant as we, you know, there'd always be that spin on it. It's crazy.
And it gives everybody, much like the podcast has given me a voice to keep in contact with my fans. Yeah, it gives every armchair quarterback. And I mean this with due respect to anybody that's, you know, I dislike the haters on Twitter. I don't want to send anything negative, but you hear it all the time. You know, people knocking the product or this, that, whatever, and everybody is entitled to their opinion.
Yeah.
But when you're really hammering hard on someone or the company or whatever with negative opinions, it's just it's a turnoff for me.
I wanted to ask you, because this is the Sports Illustrated Media podcast, just to tie in sports here a little bit. WrestleMania 14, when you work with Mike Tyson, what was that like for you? Did you enjoy it?
Enjoyed the hell out of it, man. Working with Mike, man, when I came down there in Fresno and we did that thing and I flipped him off the double birds and he pushed me and I was going back at him like a shoot and they were holding me back and we weren't supposed to get together and we didn't. But when Mike pushed me, man, $100 bills just flew out of every pocket in his suit and his handlers. If you go back and watch it on YouTube, watch everybody picking up the $100 bills on the ring. But working with Mike was so fun because he was a fan of the business. He knew more about the history of the business, wrestling business, than a lot of the boys. So we didn't sit around and just have conversation after conversation. I can't say that happened, but man, that guy, he's magnetic and he's such an entertainer. And of course, back then, he's just so feared as a boxer. That's Mike Tyson, man.
Was there anything working with him that surprised you about him?
No. Yes. Take that back. Just going into that match at 14, no moment was too big for him. You get in a big show like that, I'm working with Shawn Michaels for the World Heavyweight Championship. He didn't miss a beat. He didn't miss anything. And then hit that knockout punch, that quick right hand that hit Shawn Michaels with, and pull that punch like he did. Right. I mean, because, man, if he'd have hit Shawn Michaels with one of his punches, Shawn would still be circling the universe in orbit. Right.
He'd lose his smile for good.
No, man, but Michaels a pro's pro. Yeah. The Ritz-Carlton, every now and then I go down there and Marina Del Rey and have a drink, and sometimes Mike passes through there. Every now and then we see each other, and we give each other a hug and see each other and say, hey, catch you down the road.
Interesting. I know, listen, people in your position, you don't sort of sit there and think about your popularity, but one of the things, athletes, pro athletes, they love you. I mean, it is wild to see. I think your biggest fan might be Kevin Love. Have you seen what he recently got some piece of jewelry, Austin 316. I think you tweeted at him about it. It's got to be pretty cool for you.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. And, you know, for guys, you've got to understand, I retired in 2003. So for people, you know, that are so, you know, he's a damn good basketball player. And for anybody and any walk of life to remember what I did. Hell, I walked into a restaurant the other day and there was a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, kids, and then a 10-year-old yesterday. And they were my biggest fans. And I'm like, how does this happen? I said, I retired in 03. And the guy says, man, we just got him into WWE. And we were over eating pizza. It was at the Slice and Pint. And the girl says, I can't wait to see your show, Straight Up Steve Austin. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
a girl 10 years old still knows who I am. So yeah. it goes back to the network, WWE Network, mm-hmm. and it goes to the video games, yeah. and it keeps my presence alive in that space. Now, I don't live in that old space. I'm here doing new things and, right. and expanding. I don't dwell back on the days, and I don't wake up like this morning. I remember in 17 when I WrestleMania 17 when I kicked Rock's ass. Yeah, I don't wake up like right. that. But for all these players yeah. and guys from an NFL or MLB or NBA to live vicariously or some of the stuff that I've done, I dig it.
WWE Network and YouTube keeps you going and going and going. I'm going to ask you a question you'll probably hate, but I'll take a chance. I'm going to give you three iconic Stone Cold moments. I want you to rank them for me if you can. Beer truck, first time you stunned Vince, the Austin 316 promo with Doc Hendricks.
Now, you want me to rank those or just talk about them?
Yeah, rank them and talk about them if you don't mind. Then we'll get to straight up Steve Austin and wrap things up.
No, okay. Beer truck, Austin 316, and stunning Vince. Okay.
The only reason I ran the stunning Vince was Madison Square Garden. That crowd was batshit crazy.
Yep. So Austin 316 was very, very pivotal and important to my career because I was never supposed to win that pay-per-view.
Right.
Because of the, you know, the click yeah. hugged in Madison Square Garden and broke kayfabe, you know, Shawn was the world champion. He couldn't put the heat on Shawn. Everybody else went south, so I had to put the heat on Triple H. Triple H was supposed to win that event. I was plan B. You know, it came out of nowhere.
Right.
So, and that's when Austin 316 and because Stone Cold said so were born. Yeah. Ad lib on the spot. So that was hugely important. So that got me going. Then stunning Vince really sent out a message to the world. I mean, that transcended the business of professional wrestling. And all of a sudden it became water cooler talk. Here's this guy. He don't give a damn about nothing. His boss is this power monger. And he's trying to control him and mold him into this corporate champion. And he just won't do it. And everybody, I don't know, who's clocked in or whatever and gotten mad at the boss, you just love to just tee off one time on that son of a bitch. And I was the guy that was able to do that. Yeah. So that was obviously very important when to start that feud.
Yeah, when that segment was over, though, and you hit the locker room that second after, are you on a high from how great that segment was and the crowd going crazy, or do you and Vince talk about how he was terrible taking the stunner?
No, you know, it was so long ago. I just knew that we could have hit it a little bit smoother, but Vince is not the most coordinated guy in the world. But it happened and it worked. Yeah. And it was almost like we did it and we just kind of went to the next thing because, I mean, sometimes when don't get me wrong, it was a heavy-duty moment that many people remember, but for us in that business, like many guys in sports, it's on to the next one, like Bill Belichick. Hey, we're on the next Monday,
right?
We're on the next Sunday. I love that guy.
Yeah.
And then the last one you said, the beer truck. Everybody remembers that beer truck spraying down the rock and the Vince and swimming in the beer with all his crazy antics. I can't go 1, 2, 3. I can just all speak very fondly of those being three of the iconic highlight moments.
Oh, there's
of
a million. You know, the match. Yeah. Bret Hart with the double threat. I said this to you last year, and it's such an obscure one because it didn't. I don't. You and Rock doing that sing along for me is the all time greatest thing I've seen. That was the best.
You know, and when you think about when I come from my roots of professional wrestling from way back in the day, and I'm very, you know, heel baby, heat based, and everybody needs to be over, but your baby faces need to be beloved, and so you don't cross lines. And then I was in the gray area because you didn't know I was a baby face, but I was a guy that did everything that you weren't supposed to do.
Right.
And I had the magic and the creativity and the intelligence of Jim Ross and the passion where he couldn't understand why people believed or liked what I was doing.
Right.
And Stone Cold, I had that soundtrack. He was so helpful in my career. Right. But I would have never imagined in a million years that me and Rock could go out there, two heated rivals, and sing Margaritaville yeah. in front of 20,000 people and be out there laughing our asses off. And then, damn, next thing you know it, I mean, anytime you got Rock versus Stone Cold, it's an immediate sellout. And we headlined 3 WrestleManias, one of my favorite opponents of all time. He brought out the best in me. I brought out the best in him. And we just absolutely love working with each other.
If you're a WWE fan who's never seen that clip, it's on YouTube. You should check it out. They want me to wrap up, so I'll do a little straight up Steve Austin and we'll wrap it up. Okay. That is I like the things that are a little different. Everyone knows about the beer, but that one to me always sticks out. The career you had in the WWE, amazing. And like I said earlier, I'm fascinated by your post wrestling career. You've done so many things, and you know, it's not an easy transition, I think, going from wrestler to what you're doing. So hopefully the show does well. Give us a little tease or a taste of what people can expect from Straight Up Steve Austin USA Network, Monday, August 12th, 11 p.m. Eastern.
Straight Up Steve Austin is me and a guest, and we're just hanging out. We're doing activities. We're having fun. It's a lot of laughing, joking. There's some in-depth conversation, and doing an activity with someone, you kind of bond with them. You form chemistry, and you talk about things, and you kind of, you know, become a little bit more maybe uninhibited, and so you have conversation. We're not trying to save the world with this show, and I'm not a professional psychologist or psychiatrist,
right.
But we're out to have a good time and entertain people, and this is a 30-minute show. But in this 30-minute show, I'm hanging out with these people for 12 hours. That's how long it takes to film all this stuff.
Right.
So I get to know these people pretty well. And it's a show about having a good time. And if you can watch this show and I can take you on a 30-minute ride and make you forget about your problems, then I have done my job. And hopefully I'll get season 2 so I can apply what I learned this year and watching the edits and watch what gets on TV to next season and get better. And just like I did with my wrestling career, my last 7 matches were better than my first 7. You get it?
Right.
And
right.
So if I can keep building upon this experience and just become as good as I can, and it gives me something to do, and it gives me another challenge in life, and I want to be as good as I can be at this.
I'm sure the show will be a success. It is after Monday Night Raw. It's got great guests, and then of course Stone Cold. You don't even need guests if you have Stone Cold. So I appreciate you coming in. Good luck with the show, and hopefully you'll be back if there's a season 2.
Damn right. Good talking to you again.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right, that wraps up this edition of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My thanks to Stone Cold Steve Austin. Actually, just a great, great guy who can talk, which is, we knew this already from his WWE career, but it's great to see it happening post-career. He is a character, and fun to have him on. Check out the archives. John Sterling, Susan Wallman on the show last week, along with a preview of Hard Knocks. And make sure if you're a new listener, you subscribe, rate, and review. We'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.